As above, so below.
Welcome to Connecting with Coincidence. I am your host, Bernard Beitman, MD. I'm a psychiatrist, and I study meaningful coincidences, otherwise known as synchronicity, serendipity, seriality, and simulpathity. I invite you to come to the Coincidence Cafe, which takes place on the third Saturday of each month from 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And we tell each other coincidence stories, which we will do today. I'll tell a story, as I usually do. And our guest, Amit Goswami, will also tell us a story. And the story I will tell you is titled Telepathy in Nature. I'd met a woman named Alice several times while walking in the mountains of Mint Springs near Crozet, Virginia. I live in Charlottesville, which is 20 minutes west of where I live. One day she was walking with a man whom she introduced to me. As we talked, the image of a high school friend came onto the video screen in my mind. She told me his name was Dave. The friend in high school's name was Dave. And she told me that this guy's name was Adam. But when I thought about this Adam, I got an image of my high school friend Dave. And we used to tease him by calling him George. So I looked at Adam and confidently called him George. That turned out to be his real first name, not Adam. And that was a name only a few people called him. How had I known that? Perhaps our guest will enlighten us about that possibility. Dr. Amit Goswami is a retired professor from the physics department of the University of Oregon. He was there from 1968 to 1997. He's a renowned pioneer of the new paradigm of quantum science based on the primacy of consciousness. Goswami has written several groundbreaking popular books based on research on quantum science and consciousness, among them The Self-Aware Universe, and the most recent of his books, this one, Quantum Integrative Medicine. Now, integrative medicine is a popular thing these days. My friend Andrew Weil is one of the people that have helped that movement to take place. And Dr. Goswami is helping that to happen now, but in a different framework. And you might read that book to get some idea about the relationship between quantum thinking and medicine, and integrative medicine in particular. In 2009, Amit started a movement called Quantum Activism, and this guy is a quantum activist. You will be able to tell that today. Now gaining ground in North and South America, Europe and India, he just didn't mention Australia and Antarctica. Well, the penguins are probably not interested. It's a worldwide movement. In 2019, he and his collaborators established the Quantum Activism Vishwalayam, acting as Department of Quantum Science at the University of Technology in Jaipur, India, and developed a master's degree and a PhD program in quantum science of health, prosperity, and happiness. As you might see today, happiness is very good for your health. And that's a major part of his new book on quantum medicine. Amit was featured in the movie, great movie, What the Bleep Do We Know, in the documentaries, the Dalai Lama Renaissance and the Quantum Activist, which is what he is. Amit is a spiritual practitioner and calls himself a quantum activist in search of wholeness. Amit, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Bernard. Glad to be here.
Now, keep in mind that Amit is talking to us from Romania, maybe a 10-hour drive from Bucharest, which many of you may not know where it is, but look at it on a map. It's kind of far from here. It's in Eastern Europe. And I bring it up because I played rugby in Bucharest and a place near there called Timișoara. So, Amit, would you please tell us a coincidence story?
Well, let me tell you my own biggest coincidence probably in my entire life. You know, the concept of synchronicity, this is the official name that Carl Jung gave to this phenomenon, meaningful coincidence, but with a specific description of it. One of the item of coincidence has to be physical. Something physical happens and something coincidentally pops up in your mind that is meaningful to you. This is what the importance of synchronicity says Carl Jung. And the explanation, yes, quantum science has a very, very proper explanation of this called quantum non-locality. We'll explain all that soon, but let me tell you my story. So this was back in 1973. And tell you the truth, I was not familiar with psychological concepts much at all at that time. I was a theoretical nuclear physicist. And I was invited to a conference in California in a place called Asilomar to give a talk. This is a prestigious thing, so I was delighted to present my talk. But when I actually presented my talk, I was not very happy with that. I felt I did not deliver the talk very well. And that was confirmed to me because I thought the subsequent speakers did much better and their talks were much better received than mine. And the energy that I felt, I never felt so intensely before. It's clearly jealousy. I was jealous of those guys. And in my conversation, that bitterness showed up. I was not liking myself in how I was presenting myself to other people. And that continued even in the evening there. I was jealous because people were not paying attention to me, especially women. But of course, I was a married man. I was not really looking for any anything in that department, but still, I was expecting some attention. And anyway, so jealousy, 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 this goes on. The room felt stuffy and I had a huge heartburn. So I go outside. The place is right on the Monterey Bay. So the ocean air hits me. And that's like a such a refreshing fresh air. That all of a sudden, I was pretty, freed up from all that jealousy, it seems like. And then at the same time, I simultaneously had this thought, an intuition. And the thought came in this form. Why do I live this way? A question. And the answer followed immediately. Answer was, I don't have to. What I need to do is to integrate how I live and how I make my living, namely to get my physics with my life at large. So that really is the coincidence, the outside, the freshness of the air and freshness of my life. My life had become stagnant. There was not much meaning and purpose in it anymore. And I had to look for integrating what I did, which was really detailed questions of physics that has no relevance to real life. So I tried to find relevant physics. And that led me to quantum physics very soon. And I'm glad that it did because nobody was interpreting quantum physics correctly at that time, although people were trying. But after 12 years of that event, I was able to solve the quantum measurement problem and find the meaning of quantum physics that integrated science and spirituality.
So that integrated science and spirituality. And that's what you've been doing ever since.
Now,
usually in a synchronicity, there's a match between the inner and outer events that they are similar in meaning, like objectively. And
yes,
feeling jealousy and having a thought like that, does to me is not yet a parallel meaning. Now, it had meaning for you at the moment, obviously. It was life's transformative. But how is it that you call these the jealousy, and then you don't have to live like that, parallel events?
Now, the jealousy was not the parallel event. That's the same event terminating as an answer. The parallel event is the external event, that freshness of spontaneous ways that we experience nature.
Oh.
The ocean air, that breeze that felt on my, that came on my face, that was a freeing. I experienced that as a freeing from the stagnancy, which was in the room that I was, drinking booze and trying to socialize. So that stagnancy was part of my problem in real life as well. I was not having success in finding love, although I was married, but it was a loveless marriage, and stagnancy. Physics stagnant again because I was doing the same kind of problems over and over again. That doesn't add to the really any new creative information in anything. It's just writing papers, publish and perish, also to satisfy the governing bodies.
Yeah,
so that
I'm familiar with that one. The stagnant, both professionally and in your personal life,
yes,
meets a fresh ocean air. And this is near Big Sur, in case anybody wants to know about that, about where this takes place, which is a transformative area anyway. When you go there, a lot of stuff happens down there in California. I say down there because I was in San Francisco for a while. And here, it's still stagnant versus meets freshness. Does not appear to be the kind of parallel that Jung would talk about with the
Because the freshness was the problem of the stagnancy that quantum physics was in. There were many, many solutions, but the solutions were all leading to not the revolutionary solution that people were expecting initially. You know, quantum physics started with a tremendous paradox. The paradox was wave-particle duality. How can the same object, quantum object, be both a wave, which spreads out, and a particle, which is always localized in a place? It just cannot be. And people are trying to rationalize this in various ways. But none of the rationalizations were standing up to scrutiny. They were all paradoxical. Famous paradoxes like Schrodinger's cat is one. There was also paradox of non-locality connected to this same thing. So, and measurement paradox is the ultimate paradox. The measurement of the wave leads to a particle. But how does the wave convert to a particle? Material interactions cannot do it because quantum physics by nature is such that no material interactions can convert a wave of possibility. That's what quantum objects are, because we can calculate only probabilities of the possibility. No material interaction can convert them from possibility into actual events, particle that we see. So this was the paradox. It's a hot, if not material, you know, everybody thought that everything that there is material at that time. You know,
And what you experienced on the beach near Asilomar at Monterey Bay was a paradox. It was a polarity where you had stagnancy and you had freshness. And is that what you're saying? So that's a beautiful thing. Now that I understand it, it's such a wonderful illustration of your life's work since then, is to be able to resolve the paradoxes that are part of quantum physics and get us out of a materialistic perspective and be able to see that polarities are contained within one thing. Yin and yang is a way that a lot of people think about it.
You can explain such polarities if you start with the oneness that we call consciousness. Then these polarities start making sense. But otherwise, these polarities, there are so many of them, including like good, evil, truth, lie, this kind of polarity plus web particle polarity, male-female polarity, all these polarities are they contained in our consciousness. This polarity is the way that we see things. This is the way things are made so that we can make sense of them by comparing opposites.
By comparing opposites. And
from a material point of view.
From a material point of view. And in my book on meaningful coincidences, I emphasize the usefulness of being able to think of polarities simultaneously, to see that they're not just separate, but there is something that connects them as well. And that's hard for human beings to do. And what you have just done for me, and I hope our viewers and listeners, is be able to say that one way to think about a synchronicity is that you get a pair of opposites to make up the coincidence. Because I haven't really heard anybody present one like this, but why not get a quantum physicist to give me a new idea about synchronicity? Why not? You're doing it.
Well, this is one way to think about it. But there are other ways, of course. I mean, the main thing is that there is no explanation of such events to occur unless there is a common ground for both. And the common ground presupposes existence of a domain of reality that psychologists know about. They call it unconscious, but physicists did not know. Physicists did not admit. Physicists refused to admit that there is anything outside of space and time. So this domain, quantum physics is hinting at from the beginning. The waves are waves in a domain of reality that is outside of space and time. They become particle in the domain that we call space and time, in the domain that we call manifest. So what psychologists call unconscious is the unmanifest of quantum physics, domain of potentiality. So all these things are opposites, unconscious, conscious, self, object. These are things that we have not been able to understand with materialist science. So only objects. There is no subject looking at object. The eye of consciousness is denied in materialism. So this is the reason that I was being presented such polarities to dig it in me that, look, we got to deal with it. Something that can contain opposites, like subject-object, like two opposites that make up a synchronous event. This is the kind of thing that will solve the quantum measurement problem.
Well, thank you for emphasizing what you are now emphasizing, Amit, because I've been trying to say in a little different way that if a mental event matches an objective event and it does it on a regular basis, the polarity of self being separate from object begins to dissolve. So we have to deal with a difficult thing for human minds, which is I am a separate being, you're a separate being, I have that feeling of being a separate being, but I'm also part of my environment. So to be able to think of ourselves as both of those, synchronicity is a key to getting to the kind of quantum consciousness that I think you're talking about.
Yeah. Synchronicity is the key because the inner outer, that's another dichotomy, something outside of me is simultaneously taking place as something inside of me. Something that contains meaning for me is simultaneously taking place that is completely unrelated in the first look from any meaning that can be inside of me. So these are all such, coincidence is the word we can use, but such opposition. I mean, these are just don't make any sense. Why should I have the ability of something that is happening in the physical world along with what I'm thinking that is coming to me in my thinking universe? This does not make any sense in the first look until you find the connecting principle. Carl Jung, to his credit, initially he did not find the connecting principle, but towards the end of his life, he was getting into that direction. He proposed the collective unconscious, that is that collective, that word is very giveaway word, suggesting that humanity might be connected and collective unconscious creation of unconscious that humanity, all humanity can connect to. This idea is non-locality in quantum physics, pretty much the same. Non-locality can now be explained, which is an idea of oneness. Two people, they are non-locally connected if they are one. They can communicate just like we communicate with ourselves. We don't need any signals. Signalless communication. Ordinary communication between between people, like you and me, are communicating through sound wave and electromagnetic wave. This is all local communication. It takes a little time to reach communication from me to you and vice versa, because the signal has to go through space, taking a little time. In non-locality, all of this can be avoided. The communication simply uses this dimension. The Egyptian pictured it like this, about, you know, what the soul does after it dies. It goes like this, outside of the space and time. So communication using another domain of reality. And that domain is the domain that we call unconscious. It is consciousness without awareness. When in this manifest domain, we become aware, self-looking at objects.
How come we're not overwhelmed with the thoughts of other people then?
Say it again, please.
How come, with since it's all connected in this oneness, how come you or I are not overwhelmed by all the thinking that's going on around us?
Yes, because we feel ourselves separate. That's the rule of manifestation. So quantum non-locality is like this. So non-locally we connect, and then as soon as you have connected, as soon as you have the experience, we become disconnected again. So this connection is, so long as we are communicating via the unconscious, that connection is there. As soon as you become conscious of the communication, the connection breaks. And this is why we feel separate. Of course, brain plays a role in it too. Connection breaks, but that is not so serious, because even then, there is people who have such present-centered experiences. I myself had such a thing a few times. Then you do feel connected.
Could you tell us about one of those examples? Could you tell us one of those examples that you've had?
Well, I will give you the most significant one that ever happened to me. This is like 1976, November 1976. So I was 3 years have passed since my big event of synchronicity, and I was getting antsy because I have not found the correct right physics yet that integrates my life and what I do. And so I decided to give it a try, the well-known, what spiritual traditions say. They say that to know reality, you have to meditate. So I chose what seemed to me to be an easy meditation, which is just reciting the same word over and over in your mind. It's called mantra japa in Sanskrit. Japa means reciting repeatedly. Mantra means a word that protects you from external attentions, sidetrack as usual. So the idea is that if you do this repetition in your mind consciously for a while, it gets internalized. Psychologists actually have verified this, that if you have the same thought over and over again, what happens is that thought gets on the, think of unconscious as a lineup of various thoughts. That thought, that this particular thought, that called mantra, goes in the top of the line. So whenever you think to see what thought comes to you, it will come to you. So that thought tradition is called internalized. So their supposition was, they did not have the concept of unconscious, that the mantra goes on in your mind in spite of the fact that you are doing other things. Like, you know, multitasking. Mantra is one of the things that you are doing continuously. With unconscious concept of unconscious, we can do better. We can say that, well, it is in the unconscious, but top of the lineup of thoughts. So like 7 days I did this, and I don't know how I found the energy, because I never found that kind of energy again. On the seventh day at 11 o'clock, I still remember the time. So I go out, still with the mantra, and there was a meadow outside of my office. I had to cross the parking lot to get there. So I crossed the parking lot and get there. And as soon as I look around me in the meadow, there's nobody there. Classes are going on, and sunlight, nature, full of trees, and I feel one with everything. I cannot describe it very well. In my later description that I wrote in my diary, I quoted William Wordsworth, one of his poems, to describe the experience. But basically, things just become one. You realize that you're really not separate. The separateness that we talked about just now, we get confused, worried about our separateness with the world. That just disappears. You are one with everything. It's just very momentary. But what happened was not just momentary. The aftermath of the experience was even more remarkable. I, at that time, although I was freshly married and very happy with my second wife, all that was working, but the physics was not working. So I was a pretty unhappy man, especially when I was at work, because I still haven't found this happy physics that I was looking for. And what happened is that for two entire days, I just was happy. I was whole. I was fulfilled. I was loving to everyone. That included the cantankerous secretary with whom I never saw eye to eye, and she knew that I was in a bad place in terms of research, and it's just a bad story. But I loved her for those 2 days. After the 2 days, though, things faded off. But that experience of wholeness came back to me after many years of the work I do. It did come back to me. It did come back to me in the form of an ability that usually traditions call unconditional love, the ability to love everyone, to accumulate the possibility of loving everyone. And this has been very valuable to me ever since. I can talk about political opponents, but not with hate for them. Personally, no grudge, no complaint. It's their policies that I dislike, but I can love them. If the situation arose that they came into my life, I would have no problem in loving them. So that kind of feeling is a kind of wholeness that is the opposite of my you. That separateness that we feel, that separateness become a wholeness instead. I can respect you for being separate, but all the time knowing that you were also one with me. I'm glorifying it a little bit more than I probably should, because scientifically all I could say is that people in my experience, obviously I'm capable of loving everyone and do love everyone. But of course, I don't know outside of my experience what would actually happen if I met Putin face to face. I have no idea.
That's a problem. A lot of people I know are sending negative energy at Putin and hoping that something negative happens to him. There is evil in the world, and he is a good example of that. But we have that in the United States to a lesser degree. So what do you do about evil? We might talk about that, but it's part of the polarity of this existence is to have the good and the evil. And my idea is that you keep making the evil less evil as you make the good more good. That's a hope I have, that this polarity stays with the same distance between them, but I don't
The quantum idea is a little bit different. You don't really change the manifest so much. We don't need to. But the polarity disappears if you are looking at it as necessary from the transcendent point of view. In other words, you necessarily of course, do not never support the evil deed. But the person who is perpetrating that evil deed has potentiality which is good. From the domain of potentiality, you can see that. But only when you allow yourself to be in unconscious non-local connection with the person. And therefore, no personal hate. And yet, there is, of course, complete non-approval of the actions, evil actions are. This can be very confusing because, you know, ordinary tendency is to identify the doer and the deed. But the capacity of seeing the potentiality is what transcends good and evil.
Well, that's a separate the doer from the deed. That's a great phrase, which I hope you've used before. I imagine you have. And that's, again, to create a polarity that exists, but we don't see. And by creating the polarity, we then, almost like you on the ocean, become part of, see the whole thing as part of the same thing.
And that's the wholeness. They said the thing. I mean, in my going back to my synchronicity experience, what I saw is my future. But at that time, it was far from reality. So there is that precognitive aspect, that serendipity aspect of synchronicity experiences as well. Something about the future is being told. That wholeness was real for me. It was the experience was asking me to explore it, and that exploration took 40 years, and even now it's not complete by any means. So, you know, it can go on and on and on, and that ongoing proposition. Creativity theorists have another name for this kind of experience. They call it experience of crystallization. An experience that gives you the meaning, purpose of your life in a crystal clear way.
And the meaning of your life became studying the wholeness.
Yes.
And becoming, and I ask you to tell us more about it, and becoming a quantum activist. Would you tell us what you mean by quantum activist?
Okay, again, ordinary activism, let's begin with that and how that separates. What we do is we impose a whole bunch of changes that we want to see, but we want to see it in others. We are too lazy to follow up and change ourselves. So ordinary activist is usually tend to be a little bit of what we call perfectionist, which is a personality characteristic. They want to see the world perfect, that part is good, but they impose it on others. They never impose it on themselves. And this is the failure of activism. When we look at politics today, every political person is an activist, but always changing others, finding fault with others, blaming others, but never themselves. This hypocrisy is the problem. So quantum activism from the get-go, lets go of this subject-object kind of split. If you want to change the world, you also have to change yourself. So changing the world at the same time, changing yourself is quantum activism.
Now, I think that's so important. And I'll say it in my terms, but I think it's similar to what you just said, that I am bothered by the other end of that, where people are only focusing on themselves and their own spiritual development, and not paying attention to doing something about the way the world is. And exactly. the term spiritual bypassing has been used to describe people who are absorbed like that. So what do you think of the opposite of the activists changing the world and not changing themselves versus the only changing yourself and not trying to do something about the way the world is?
Yeah, so there is also that. People who are ordinary activists that try to change the world without changing themselves. And then there are zealous spiritual people who try to change themselves but not bother about the world. Both are extremes. What we need to do instead, we have to see the wholeness. We have to reach wholeness in all this, which is that I changing without the world changing is not meaningful because I'm not really separate from the world. That wholeness has to be seen. And similarly, changing the world without changing me is not meaningful either because, again, we are not seeing the wholeness.
Now, I'm assuming that the work you're doing, because this is true of me in my work with synchronicity, serendipity, and seriality, that by doing this work, I'm trying to bring a central idea to bringing people together with the oneness that you're describing, and also changing myself as I do that, that I learn in a reciprocal way from what I'm doing as I try to help. So it becomes a smooth process, but it's taken quite a while to be able to get to this position. I assume that you are doing the same thing, that the more you're a quantum activist and trying to bring these ideas to other people, the more that continues to change yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the thing is that, you know, all the things that I do, changing myself becomes an essential part of it. I'll give you an example.
Please do.
I have been a writer since 1990s, serious writer. But I never, research was the more important thing, and the activism, those were more important thing. Writing is just something that happens gradually. So I was writing about a book every couple of years. And then suddenly things happen, and I get a bunch of people who are also interested in starting a master's and PhD program in quantum science, because there really isn't any program, including the transpersonal psychology schools, great schools in California, but they don't teach transformation. They teach, they talk about it. Everybody's talking about meditation, spiritual enlightenment, writing series of books, but not emphasizing the fact that you have to start somewhere. You have to start meditating and really experience the expansion of consciousness before you can talk about oneness, right? So that struck me really a huge contradiction, huge missing gap between what the students learn, a lot of theory, but no experience at all what it means. And so we started this program, PhD program. We found a university in India that surprisingly took a chance on us, and we became part of their program in the fact that now we have an affiliated university so that students don't have to worry about the validity of their degree. So all that was done, but the problem was that I had only those 10 books that I have published, taking my time in the time that I had, like 30 years. 10 books are not enough for an entire curriculum.
Ah.
So we started writing books, but we figured out the courses. So 22 books are needed. So
wow. 12. Wow.
So guess what happened next, though? It's amazing that I just became busy to write. Of course, Valentina came about by co-author, and she helps a lot. And also a few others, students came along. Now they are helping a lot. But still, the rate of writing in the next 5 years, we published 5 books and 5 manuscripts already. So 10 books did happen in a rather quick time. Where did that come from? I mean, this is the kind of thing which also I would describe as a synchronicity.
I would too. The only recently I've become more aware of having a need, and it comes to me. And that's just what you're talking about. You had a need for 10 books.
Yes.
And people arrived somehow for that to happen. My fun in this, because I've had needs with the Coincidence Project, which I started recently, various needs, and pop, there it was. And it came out of the blue. And I asked people how that happened, but it came when I needed it. How do you explain you're getting the people that you needed when you needed them?
Exactly. The whole creation of the universe, let me tell you that story. It is also a big synchronicity. So I was invited to give a talk in India, a spiritual organizations. And so again, I give my talk and people are impressed. And the head of the ashram, that's what it was, the ashram had a spiritual head. So he invited me with his administration, about 12 people. We are sitting and we are talking. So he asked me, how are these ideas received in the world outside? So I said, yeah, the ideas are received, but it's very slow. I wish that I had an organization for teaching it so we could train people in quantum science and so that they would be really applying this science into areas of health, even business. So I explained about 4 or 5 minutes, and then suddenly he pops the idea, why don't you make your own university? We'll support it, just like that. And his financial manager is sitting right there, the financial who supported the ashram. He said, yes, we'll do it, so very enthusiastic. So that's how it started. Of course, what happened was that the financial eventually backed out, too many commitments on his part, and it was really, he was too far committed into programs that already was being supported. So that did not pan out. But eventually that did lead to the university. Another person came out, came about, and we started it with him, and eventually this program started more or less taking care of itself.
Well, that's what I'm asking you about, this taking care of itself. It has something to do, again, with the unity you're describing, but also has something to do with you and the people around you. The way I experience it is I have an openness that's a need. And my heart is open. This is a good thing, I think, that I'm doing here. And then something about that feeling of need, not even asking what people call the universe, just having the feeling of the need, seemed to have people just emailing me saying, I can fulfill your need, even though I don't know I'm doing that. How does that happen?
I have a friend named Gioacchino Pagliaro in Italy. He has written a book on the subject of creative intentionality. Intentionality is basic to quantum physics. So I had that idea. He added the phrase creative intentionality, and I like it. The idea of creative intentionality, we're already using it in our teachings. The idea is to be in tune with the movement of consciousness. If we look at biological evolution, evolution is not strictly speaking Darwinian. Darwinism is there, but there are also quantum leaps and purposes.
Quantum leaps, yes, sir.
And all that. So when we look at it, we clearly see that consciousness is evolving with a purpose. The purpose is to bring what we are talking about. Heaven on earth is the way Teilhard de Chardin put it. Building heaven on earth, embodiment of good, embodiment of love, embodiment of truth. When that happens, then we can say that we truly have heaven on earth. So if that is what we are doing, then the idea of synchronicity, purpose of synchronicity, serendipity, all these things are really to help with that. So how can we have more synchronicity in our life, more serendipity in our actions? By tuning ourselves to the movement of consciousness.
And what is the movement of consciousness? What do you mean by that?
That's the purpose, that heaven on earth, building.
Well, I appreciate your quoting Teilhard de Chardin because I use a concept of his I call now the psychosphere, which is the same idea, similar idea to the noosphere that he came up with. And I recently had an astrological reading for the Coincidence Project. And the basic line from the reading was that we're trying to bring heaven to earth. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad that you tell me Teilhard said the same thing, because I'm not only...
I have not found another phrase which describes the essence of what we are doing, essence of the movement of evolutionary movement of consciousness better than just three words. Four words, heaven to earth.
Well, we're doing the same thing. And what I like to call it a playground, just because I like to have fun. And part of this is defining what we mean by heaven, because heaven has a lot of different meanings. So what is this heaven that we have on earth? How do you conceptualize that?
Well, I always tell the distinction of heaven and hell is the best way to understand it. And for this, I have a great Thai story. In Thailand, they have a simple way of distinguishing it. Both heaven and hell have this huge banquet, and people are served a huge, wonderful dinner. Only problem is that everybody sits in a round table, and the utensils, the eating apparatus, they're all very big, the length of the table. Like you have a big fork like this, big spoon like this, big knife like this. So how do we do that? People who live in hell, they try to feed themselves in vain, because it's of course impossible to weld a 3-foot, 4-foot of fork to feed yourself. But people in heaven, they just feed the person sitting opposite to themselves. They have no problem in feeding. So that's pretty much it. I mean, you know, selfishness versus selflessness.
Thank you. I mean, I have not heard that one in many years. So again, you're evoking some wonderful ideas in me that I have not heard in quite a while, except the heaven on earth is more recent. And that's a way to think about it. But I like to dance, among other things. I like to move. So I like to be able to think of what we can do here as a dance through which we have fun, and that we learn, that part of play is being able to have fun while learning, or learn while having fun. That's my way of thinking about an aspect of this heaven on earth.
Absolutely. It begins with expansion of consciousness, and that begins with having fun. If you were anytime we are not having fun, we are not at ease with ourselves, we contract consciousness. You will notice that you were feeling less generous to everything. That generosity requires an expansion of consciousness. So the way we connect, the way we connect and become connected to heaven is precisely just that. Expansion, the ability of expansion of consciousness. Valentina and I wrote a book on the quantum brain. The title is Quantum Brain. It's a book on the brain. Our brain has conditions in it which are detrimental to oneness. This is the reason that most people cannot reach this easiness with the world of separateness. They are not at ease with themselves and not at ease with others. They are into that separate, contracted consciousness.
Yeah.
I think most scientists of our time, including virtually all the media people of our time.
Yeah.
And this is, of course, causing a huge crisis. The good stuff is there, but it's all in potentiality. The heaven is all in potentiality.
Yeah.
As Carl Jung used to say, the objective of the universe is to make the potentiality conscious, make the unconscious conscious. So that is really what we have to do. This unconscious potentiality of archetypal exploration is in ourselves, and we can do it. Our brain has a little bit of it, otherwise we probably could never do it.
Right.
Has some of it. Our ancestor did it for us. That's the collective unconscious, where there are positive emotions of goodness, altruism, these things, romance, these things are built into our paraphernalia, religious motherly love. So, and we can build on it, we can take quantum leap on it, we can make the heart quantum, we can make the brain quantum, and that way we become transformed.
So how can people increase a mechanism by which to do what you're just saying, which is to have more synchronicities?
Well, the brain, we found, I had a collaborator in my research for a short while, long ago, when I was writing Self-Aware Universe, I met a neurophysiologist in Mexico, Jacobo Greenberg. He was a wonderful experimenter, did an experiment where electric potential was transferred from one correlated person connected by non-locality to another person without going through any electrical apparatus, non-locality. Wonderful experiment. So this same guy and I worked together for a while. And at that time, we theorized that there is in the brain, there is the P-conscious, there is the ego, there is also the present-centered quantum self-experience of oneness, but reflection in the mirror of memory produces additional separateness, and that is what we call ego. And ego is pretty localized. Its location is prefrontal cortex. Brain scientists talk about it. It's a default area. If you're doing a task, in between the doing the task, consciousness falls into the default area. That's where the ego is. So, but of course, how does one get into the quantum self, that present-centered self that is also present in potentiality in all of us, but we don't experience it? In between is half a second of processing time. This also neuroscientists have measured. Reflection in the mirror of memory takes half a second. But one can meditate and enter this preconscious. This preconscious does all kinds of editing to us. It introduces lies, subjectivity, adjusting things to what you want to see rather than reality. All these kinds of things, we call it reconstructive memory, is due to editing that happens because of this preconscious part in the brain. But if you enter it through meditation, then that preconscious domain reduces and reduces, becomes smaller and smaller. In other words, the quantum self-experience is not as rarefied in preconscious versus in our fully ego-conscious. And that is the trick. This is why meditation is so important. This is why over the ages, so many people have glorified practice of meditation. What they didn't know, that meditation, practice of meditation with the objective of an archetypal exploration produces also quantum leaps. They did not have the concept of quantum leaps, so nobody talks about it except Zen tradition. They talk about sudden enlightenment, that suddenness is the key to quantum leaping. So, in this way, one can do it in a fairly simple conceptual schema. The practices take time. Motivation is very important, and today world motivation is very difficult to organize because it is a difficult world. There is very little support for, as you know very well, very little support for transformational work. Nobody wants to see you transform. Even your relatives don't want to see you transform. They want you to be in the same place that you are. This is a huge problem for any creative person. But so long as, of course, we create outside, people will let it be. But if you try to change yourself through your creativity, then it's a no-no for almost even your family. So in that environment, it is hard. What surprised us when we founded this university is that from the get-go, we were getting students. It's in retrospect, I am amazed that, we had graduated already 4 batches of master's students. I mean, they're just simply amazing that how we are actually making a dent in the world of this question of heaven and earth, because every one of these students are more aware than they were when they entered the program.
And that's because they are experiencing. It's not just theoretical, it's direct experience. And I'm imagining that you have a lot of people meditating in as part of your master's and PhD program.
Yes, yes.
I wonder, are you including any measurements of their increases in synchronicity? Because what you're describing is when they come in, the difference between when they come out and the frequency of synchronicity is going to be pretty dramatic.
That's one of the criterion they use of transformation. There is more synchronicity in your life.
I have a valid and reliable measurement for us meaningful coincidences that might be helpful as part of the measurement, unless you've got one yourself.
I mean, we also are thinking of actually measuring things like vital energies in your heart and stuff, which we can do today. Biophoton emission, it's called.
Yeah.
So that kind of thing. But Kalian photography is another way. So we can do those. But if, the simplest measurement, you know, is actually increase of synchronous events. Another one is how long it takes you to come out of a negative emotional experience.
Good.
It good. Actually reduces as one becomes more and more transformed. The time for coming out of a negative episode reduces drastically.
Those are wonderful measures. We're coming near the end of our time, and I want to ask you about something that's been very intriguing to me. First of all, I need to have references to establish that we each have a bioelectric field, that is measurable. And Carillion photography is one way to do it. And I know a guy who takes good photographs of auras, as other people might call them. And I want evidence for that, but I'm also interested in interpersonal energy. And I have not seen any data that says that it can be measured, because even in a Zoom call like this, there's energy between you and me, and I can pick it up, and you probably can pick it up as well. So I would like to be able to have a measurement of the flux of that interpersonal energy, because I'm a psychotherapist. I've been able to experience that between people. I feel it on the dance floor. Dancers know this interpersonal energy exists. What kinds of measurement scientific data do you have for measuring interpersonal energy?
We have a very simple technique that people can use to get an immediate measurement, which is that if you rub your palms, and then if you split them up a little, you can easily feel tingles. And these tingles are not nerve signals. How do you know that? Because they're not in the direction of the brain necessarily. They have different directions at different places. In fact, some of these tingles seem to go from one palm to the other palm. So much so that if somebody else put their palm inside my activated palms, they will be able to feel the tingle. So this is the best way of seeing immediately that a person has reach the preconscious state in the brain, because then there would be much more easy to create vital energy at the palms.
That's the third time today that you have mirrored something of mine, Amit, that I've never seen anybody do what you just did. I've never seen it. Holding hand separate like this, I could see strings of energy between my fingers, kind of like cat's cradle with strings around each one of them. And I could separate them and the strings would stretch, and I could bring them together and they'd come together. And they were a color of green and gold. Their colors were green and gold. So I was doing this kind of watching this color, these threads of energy between my fingers, and somebody came along, just as you said, and put her hand between my fingers, just like that. And it was like watching a prow of the boat go through waves, and it separated the energy in a way that a boat would separate energy of waves going through those waves. So you have just mirrored me in one of my early electromagnetic experiences, and I thank you very much for that mirror.
Yes, the whole scene of how this unfolding, quantum science is unfolding, is remarkable. I mean, we literally, when we started back in 1970s, late 70s, we had absolutely no idea of what the connection of spirituality and science would be, you know, except for there being parallels. There was a book out by Fitch of Capra, Dao of Physics, I did read it. It did inspire me because it showed parallels. But to me, parallels were not interesting. Who cares? But what was interesting is that, is this real? Why should there
What's
be?
What's interesting is real. And I kind of knew, I could see it, so I knew it was real. I just like to see your reflection of it back. It just reminds me. And it tells me that you and I have had a nice connection today. I certainly feel it. And I like being able to talk with you. You're kind of a happy guy. And that makes it nice too. So we're coming to the end of our time today. Is what would you like to end our discussion with today?
Well, in my journey towards wholeness, I found the exploration of love very important, very potent. That was my path. Spiritual maturity that I gained in the exploration of love, for that I always thank my second wife, who married me without falling in love with me. She was upfront about it. She said, I see potentiality in you. She didn't use that word potentiality, but she said something, there is something honest about you that I want to see come to fruition. And but she also said that, you tell me I love you all the time, please don't, because you don't speak from your heart. Learn to love from your heart. Not in the same words, I'm sure, but similar words. And I initially did not care about the words, because what is heart? But then gradually I saw that, yes, she means it. She's also trying to love me from, deeper place herself. So we did it together, and it took us 7 years to fall in love.
Excuse me for saying this, but I love that story. I love that story because it's work, and it's so wonderful that she saw the potential in you,
yeah,
and that she helped you, and you probably helped her expand the heart. And I'm writing, again, you're helping me here, so thanks for this, and I'll explain it. I'm writing my personal meaningful coincidences, starting when I was a boy, of my life till now. And it's a life review that I don't have a near-death experience to have to do to do that. But one of the themes is that I have had a lot of incidences with heart, several of them. And one of them that I want to say to you, and I think you can elaborate on that, is that I gave a talk when I was in medical school on the Purkinje fibers of the heart. The Purkinje fibers of the heart are muscle fibers that evolved into nerve conduction-like fibers. And these Purkinje fibers that used to be heart muscle are now muscle that you form a previous muscle that conducts electrical activity from the atria to the ventricles to keep our hearts rhythmic in their contraction. So one of the things in your book, again, this one, quantum integrative medicine, is the primacy of heart and the primacy of love, and that there is a brain in the heart, is what you say in that book. And that made me put together this talk I gave as a medical student with the Purkinje fibers, as actually there are nerve-like fibers in the brain that don't get much recognition. And I want to bring recognition to these Purkinje fibers in the heart as a way of supplementing what you've written in your quantum integrative medicine book.
Mm-hmm. Great.
So I thank you very much for.
Shall I give you my website so people can look up?
Please do. Please do.
AmitGoswami.org, AmitGoswami.org.
And we will put that in the bio underneath our talk on the video as well as the audio. So they'll be able to see it there too. But Amit Goswami, coincidence.com.
Yeah.
That's an easy one. And lots of books and a great guy to meet. So, ladies and gentlemen, I'm on your behalf. I thank Amit for joining us today, and it was a great time to talk with you.
This psychosphere is our mental atmosphere, like a hologram of cosmic consciousness.